thoughts about cooking something up with me.
And welcome back. It's another edition of What You Got Cookin', our bi-monthly tribute to the wonders of good food, good cooks, and good eats. As always, we're joined by Midday's resident foodies John Shields and Sasha Wohlhandler. John's a chef, an author, and the owner of Gertrude's Restaurant at the Baltimore Museum of Art. He's also a host of Coastal Cooking and Chesapeake Bay Cooking on Maryland Public Television and PBS. John, good to see you.
Hey, good to see you, Tom.
And Sasha Wohlhandler, she and her husband Steve Susser just recently retired from their long career running Sasha's 527 Cafe in Mount Vernon. Sasha, good to see you.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
So you have sold the business. The catering is now being done by the folks who run the Elephant Restaurant, and you've sold the restaurant, Sasha's itself. Do you have any idea what the plans of the new owner has?
Well, the gentleman is from Washington, D.C., and he's really excited about Baltimore. In fact, I think he's bought some other properties besides Sasha's. I think he wants to... He's speaking to some people in the area about a possible restaurant there. He also has some of his own ideas, possibly a club of some type. I know he has some artisanal cocktail lounges in Washington.
So he's in the business.
He's in the business, and he's most importantly really in love with Baltimore and in love with the Mount Vernon area. So I think that is such a plus and so exciting to see come in and see that, you know, the building, which of course has a life of its own. We all know that Wallace Simpson Warfield used to get her hair done there when it was Andre's hair salon before she ran off to marry that foreigner. So it has great ghosts, great history, and I think it'll live on to be something wonderful.
All right. Well, we will keep an eye on it and wish you all the best in this new chapter for you and
Thank
Steve.
You.
That's great. And we have a very special guest today. Chef David Thomas is here. He's previously the chef and owner of Herb and Soul Cafe. And Mr. Thomas has now partnered with the media company Real News Network on a brand new restaurant in downtown Baltimore called Ida B's Table. It will serve what Thomas calls modern soul food and also pay culinary homage to its namesake, the 19th and 20th century African-American journalist and civil rights activist Ida B. Wells, who died in 1931. So Ida B.'s Table is in the Real News Network's building at 235 Holiday Street. Not quite open yet, but it's going to be open, I guess, David Thomas, with a soft opening next week and
yep.
a sort of an official opening in September.
September, absolutely.
All right. Well, good luck to you on that.
Thank you.
And thank you for being here this afternoon and
My pleasure.
Talking about
thank
soul
you for
food
me.
And Southern cuisine. You're welcome. If you all have... ideas about your favorite soul food dishes, your favorite Southern cuisine dishes, give us a call, 410-662-8780, our email midday at wipr.org, and our Twitter handle at midday Tom Hall. So, David Thomas, how do you define modern soul food?
Well, you know, modern soul food for me is just a way for me to pay homage to those who came before me, whether it was, you know, our ancestors that came over as slaves, the Native Americans that were here that told us and showed us how to really grow and really taught us what agriculture was in this country. That's what it's about for me, putting a spin, maybe changing a few things in terms of what we put on the plate, with the essence of those flavors, the traditions of those flavors still existing. For me, I think soul food has always been, whether you call it Southern or soul food, it's all the same. But for me, it's about those flavors, that nostalgia, what you remember as a child, growing up eating that food. But it's also about sustainability. And I know that's kind of cliche now, but slaves were eating to survive. And this whole beautiful thing about whole hog cooking and not wasting any of the animal, that's how we survived. So that's nothing new to us, and I just want us to pay respect to that while embracing our heritage and embracing the cuisine that we created. So.
Chef David Thomas, his new endeavor is Ida B's Table. By the way, we are broadcasting and streaming on Facebook Live this afternoon. So if you want to check us out at the WYPR Facebook page, that would be terrific. Thanks to Jamila Kremple, our digital producer, for making that happen. So John Shields, Southern cooking, as David says, Southern cooking, soul food. I mean, they're very much interlocked, are they not?
They are. You know, it's defining regions. It's defining a sense of place. It's all kinds of cultures coming together and producing distinct regional cuisines. You know, I mean, when you think about the South in general, it was an agricultural community. It was kind of the place where we grew things for hundreds and hundreds of years. So I think that's reflected in the food. You know, it's an earthy, it's a wonderful, real kind of cuisine. Yeah. And it makes you smile.
Yeah. And Sasha Wohlhändler, I mean, what David Thomas is doing is certainly something that I think a lot of, you know, great chefs are latching onto, which is updating sort of traditional traditions and traditional recipes, so that, you know, you can fry chicken differently than you did before. You can, you know, do greens and collards differently than you did before, or beans differently. I mean, you can put new spins on things.
I just wanted to address that. I'm sure David can take it further. You know, soul food, for those of you, and many people, of course, know what it is. You just mentioned some of the great dishes. I just want to talk a little bit about the flavor profiles. You know, we would, and you can correct me and add on to this, I just know that in our fried chicken, and when we've done it, some of the flavor profiles that we use would be, of course, pepper and garlic powder and onion powder and chili powder and some thyme and cayenne, and mix that in the flour. So you've got a really robust flavor there. And sometimes I have updated, because I'm always trying to lose that extra 5 pounds. We all love fried chicken. But if you wanted to do kind of semi-guiltless fried chicken, you could take a chicken breast, boneless and skinless, or thighs, and put them in an egg white. And in the egg white, put some Dijon mustard and put some of those. And then in your panko breadcrumbs, you could add all of those seasonings I talk about. So you've eliminated the egg yolk. You're not doing a deep frying. You're going to take it from that egg white mixture, put it in your panko, and then put it on a sheet tray that has a wire rack on it, and bake it for 20 minutes. Is it perfect, like really delicious deep fried chicken? Maybe not. But is it close to it when you put a little lemon rind sprinkled on it and a little cayenne, serve it with a little Dijonais sauce on the side or some chutney? It's pretty delicious, and it's a little bit more guilt-free for those of us trying to mm-hmm. watch our weight.
And I think that's the beauty of, you know, cooking in general. You know, we all have our way of doing things. We have a reason for doing things that we do. The way that I do fried chicken is a little different than most in the South. Most people are talking about a buttermilk fried chicken. Well, I don't marinate mine in buttermilk. I'm buying a pasteurized chicken. We're butchering that ourselves. And then in my restaurant, we have an Old Bay fried chicken. So I'm taking that chicken and I'm putting it directly in King Arthur's flour that's been seasoned with Old Bay, garlic powder, and kosher salt. We then dredge it in that flour, deep fry it, and then we hit it with more Old Bay when it comes out of the fryer. So everybody has a different way.
It gives a Maryland twist to it. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think you got to do that. You know, I don't think you can cook anything in Maryland without having a little Old Bay in it.
Yeah.
Right?
So,
and fried chicken is just one of those things that people love. So if we can just accent it with a taste of Maryland, I think it's a hit. So yeah.
Because, you know, as the owner of a restaurant, and a restaurant business, I mean, all three of you are in the restaurant business. It's mm-hmm. just, my hat goes off to you, because I think it's one of the hardest businesses just going. I mean, everybody's got the next new thing. But, you know, you're serving to a clientele, a downtown clientele. You're open for breakfast and lunch, and then dinner on the weekends, as mm-hmm. I understand it, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
You know, so there are folks who are health conscious, who don't yes. want to eat deep fried food. So mm-hmm. you got to serve to them, but you also have to serve to those folks who, if they hear, oh, there's a, you know, modern soul food restaurant, I want what I expect when I hear the term soul food.
Yeah, I mean, and you're going to get those people. And I think that's the beauty of what we're trying to do. I started this whole mindset of not just necessarily modern soul food, but changing the perception of soul food when I own my other restaurants, and, you know, introducing quinoa and farro and barley into our diet. Now, obviously, we were eating that stuff a long time ago, but as African Americans, we've been locked in time, so to speak, in the things that we had in our diets. And all we're trying to do now is introduce some of these things that we forgot about. We have these more heirloom grains that are available now. We have people who are cultivating these things, and I would really love to be able to bring them back into focus. And that's what I'm trying to do. We have to have some of those healthier things on the menu. In my other restaurant, I had a lot of vegan clients, a lot of vegetarian clients. I have a lot of things on this new menu that I can alter from a meat eater's perspective into a vegetarian or vegan perspective. So just like our greens, for instance, we're doing a Liberian greens, which, if everybody knows about Liberian greens, they're traditionally done with seafood. traditional collard greens usually done with either some type of ham hock or some type of meat. Mine are completely vegan. You know, I'm using a lot of seasonings and layering it, but I'm not adding any meat at all. But you would never know it when you taste them. So those are the kinds of things that we're going to do in the restaurant to make the meat eaters happy along with the vegetarians and vegans. So,
yeah. And John Shields, you certainly were among the very few people who were way ahead of the curve on this so-called farm-to-table movement. I remember years ago going to a meeting about slow food as opposed to fast food. And you talked, this was, I don't know, 15 years, 20 years ago, a long time ago, where you said, you know, part of the problem was, you know, training our clients, training the customers of the restaurant to, like, not go crazy when the red potatoes aren't all exactly the same size, you know? It takes a while for people's tastes and expectations to change. But, boy, once you talk about doing the kinds of things David's talking about, all fresh ingredients, all ingredients, many of them are locally produced, you can make some beautiful dishes, even traditional dishes. You can change them up and really make them taste great.
Yeah, that's the way we've always been cooking. And, you know, when we try to think about this new hottest craze in the world of the farm to table, well, you know, it's only been a blip, this tiniest little blip on the course of history that we didn't have that.
Absolutely.
It's always been the way that we've
eaten. It's a retro thing, isn't
it?
Yeah.
So, you know, when I came home to Baltimore after being in California for 20 years and the first thing I started looking for was farmers, because that's the way that I grew up. You know, I went to all the municipal markets around here. My family were farmers, and that's just the way you did. So it's a pretty sensible way to do things, and the food is unbelievable. I mean, it shows in the taste. And this notion and this reimagining of the cuisine and of Southern cuisine and of soul food, what you're doing, David, is just so important, because what we're trying to do is kind of go plant forward, kind of switching a little bit of that emphasis of having 12 ounces of meat and fat. You can take that same meat and do medallions of that particular meat. You could slow cook it and simmer it and stew it, but on a beautiful...
But teeny little portions of it.
But on top of a big portion or a larger portion of maybe some grits with some fresh greens that have been lovingly cooked. And so you're still getting the wonderful flavors, the essence of the food, but you're doing such a good thing for our bodies and for the planet.
Yeah.
So it's reimagining the way we approach our food. And I think we as chefs, that's what we're called to do right now.
Yeah,
that's what we're supposed to be doing.
It's What You Got Cooking here on Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Joining me in the studio, Chef David Thomas. He's the new proprietor of a restaurant called Ida B's Table. Sasha Wolhander, a longtime restaurateur here in Charm City. And John Shields, who oversees Gertrude's Restaurant at the BMA. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. What's your favorite dish when it comes to soul food or Southern cuisine? Our email, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. So, Sasha Wolhander, speaking of greens, the farmer's market are overloaded with okra.
Mm.
I've never been an okra fan. I've tried it a couple times. I just haven't, but I haven't done it. And David's looking at me with his eyes wide. Are you kidding me? How can you not like okra?
Yeah.
So you guys got to tell me how to make okra, and I promise I'll get some Sunday morning and make it.
Well, I myself am not. I like okra, but I don't know how to cook it really well. I'm going to turn it over to David or to John for either there. But the greens at the farmer's markets, folks, go this Sunday. Everything is just bursting. It is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
couldn't be a better time to go, David.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
this is the time of year. But okra, oh my goodness, there's a lot of different ways to cook it. Obviously, you know it in gumbo and things of that nature. But deep frying gumbo is probably one of my favorite snacks. So you just take that okra and maybe you dredge in a little egg wash flour, and then egg wash, and then put it in a little cornmeal and deep fry it. And then I serve it with what I call our comeback sauce, and it's akin to like a combination of tartar and cocktail together. Fresh horseradish, a little Worcestershire, tomato, mayo, with a kick of cayenne as well. You dip those things. It's just a beautiful snack. So I love to eat okra. It's a great snack for me.
By the way, Michelle writes in and says, can you explain the difference between soul food and Southern cuisine? Sounds to me like you're not really looking for a big demarcation line here.
I mean, it's I mean, Southern food, I mean, let's go back to the very beginning. You know, we talk about Southern and soul food. At the very beginnings of this country, you have what we called slave food. It was the slaves that were in the kitchen cooking. From that cuisine, we look at, if you go through time, post-Emancipation Proclamation, so late 1800s, you had more Southern whites in the kitchen cooking the meals. Still the same cuisine. We're all, I mean, it's all infused from German and Italian and Asian. Then you move into the late 1960s. So 1960s, you hear about the Black Power movement. That's when you started hearing more about soul food. Didn't change. It was all the same. But now you just have this different
kind
label
of
on it.
Rebranded a little
yeah,
bit. Yeah,
just a different name on it. And then you have a lot of these chefs and guys that I revere. Like you have Sean Brock. Who's my guy down in New Orleans? John Besh. All these guys, and Mr. Shields, who have taken this same model and made a business out of it. And all I'm looking to do is, okay, what is the next stage in the evolution of this Southern soul food? And we've got to add barbecue and Creole and Cajun. All of that is incorporated into that as well. So what's the next stage? It kind of stalled at soul food, and we never really expanded it. Unless we're talking about Southern food, but it's all the same to me. So when I designed this restaurant, I wanted to first reclaim the history and make us understand that there's a connection between all the things that we've learned and the things that we're not talking about. So modern soul food for me is just an extension of what we're already doing. We're just changing some of the elements that we've added that we've used to add before, and maybe updating the plate presentation, because soul food has never gotten the kind of acclimated being the greatest looking plate. Mm-hmm. It might taste good, but it's never been revered as this great looking plate of food. So that's what we intend to do with Ida B's Table, is to not just change the perception of how healthy it is, but how it looks on the plate. You know, can this be put up against some of the best restaurants in the country? And I'm not the only one that's doing it. I have a friend who is in Seattle, Eduardo Jordan, who owns a couple restaurants. And if you go to his website, you'll see him and I have the same vision. If you look at his food, it's beautifully presented, but he's using foraged mushrooms and, you know, these things that people would not necessarily associate with soul food. But if you really look at the history, we were eating rabbit. You know, we were eating duck. We were eating those things that we could catch.
Yeah, the stuff that was around.
Yeah,
right,
that's how we survived.
Yeah,
but
for
a long time, you know, duck and, you know, things of that nature were revered more in these high-end restaurants, and we've gotten lost in the fried chicken and mac and cheese kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So we're just trying to look at that and expand people's horizons about what soul food could be.
Could be, yeah.
I think what you're speaking about, and it's so exciting to hear, David, is the great fusion of spices, taking the original spices mm-hmm. that I spoke about before, the flavor profiles there, and just adding great dimension that comes from Africa, comes from Haiti, comes from France, comes from all of that that is joined in the great chefs that you mentioned and yourself, and elevating it all to the next level, and going from the farm to the table and expanding that. It's really exciting. When we first started Sasha's, the restaurant, in 2000, I think I was one of the first to start shrimp and grits back then. And Baltimore just fell insanely in love with it. Or fried green tomatoes that we would top with remoulade sauce that would then go to a Dijonais sauce that would go on top of greens, that would get top with crab, that could get top with pork. It just became a whole new element. So what you speak to is just allowing the imagination to go wild into the next level.
Yeah, and John Shields, I think one of the terrible ironies of this week, when we had this horrible tragedy in Charlottesville, where you have these racist supremacists marching through the streets, trying to literally eliminate other cultures, eliminate African-American culture, eliminate Jewish culture. Here we have, you know, this incredible intolerance for anything different than this very narrow notion of what it means to be a human being. And it's exacerbated by a president who will not call it for what it is, and who will not come out and be a leader when it comes to identifying it and condemning it. But on the other hand, we have the term Southern hospitality. You know, which is just, it's so bizarre that this notion of the South as a hospitable, welcoming place would be the place that, you know, white nationalists and the Ku Klux Klan continue to thrive.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, you know, when you think about it. And yeah, the South is known for quote unquote Southern hospitality. And I think that there are many elements that are so true because, you know, people have always lived and wanted to party. But there's been also, you know, great divisions there. And that's where I see food as kind of the healing element. I look at it as our common table. And throughout the last generations, we've seen it over and over again, all cultures coming together around food, whether growing, whether presenting it, community gatherings around food. It's the great equalizer. It brings us to the table and it puts us on a level where we can talk with each another to learn and to grow. And I think that's where so much of the healing is going to come from, is when we all come together around that common table.
And David Thomas, there's a guy that I've talked to a few times when I was doing the morning show, a guy named Michael Twitty, who is a historian mm-hmm. of the African food culture.
Yep.
He has a website called Afro-Culinaria.
Yep.
And he also goes so far as to cook his food in the ways that slaves would cook the food, given the utensils and the fire mechanisms and stuff that they had. He limits himself to those things.
Yeah.
How important is that to have an understanding of how this food sort of logistically was put on the table during the days when the slaves were cooking?
Yeah, I mean, it's everything. You know, we're now all spoiled because we have convection ovens and deep fryers and all that good stuff, which I do have in the restaurant. But you'll notice a trend in a lot of restaurants. They have these open pits that they're cooking on. I mean, it's a very trendy thing, but that is how we cooked years ago. You know, we cooked on open flame. You know, we stoked the coals and, you know, it was important. That's how we cooked. So, and I know Michael Twitty. I've met him. He's coming to my restaurant for the grand opening. I mean, it's very important. I think we have to understand how to build flavors. I mean, I think so many times chefs want to over-season things and, you know, we want to use these intricate spices and stuff that is, you know, kind of exotic. I like pure food. There's nothing wrong with using foie gras and caviar or whatever else you want to add to a dish. But one of the best chefs that I ever talked to, a good friend of mine who was a master chef, told me the most important thing a chef can do is cook an egg and a simple roasted chicken. If you can do those things accurately, consistently, then we can talk about you cooking in my kitchen. And that's what I've always thrived on, that simplicity. You don't need to over-season food as long as you know how to work with what you have. And I think back in those days, we didn't have anything except for fire.
Yeah.
And to be able to get these different flavors and nuances right. with just flame and a piece of cast iron or a piece of steel, it's inspiring.
So, Sash, do you have a favorite dish in the realm of Southern cuisine or soul food?
Well, I have to say I do love fried chicken. I cannot wait to come and try your Old Bay fried chicken. I just love the way you're speaking about food. It comes from your soul. And to what you spoke about earlier so eloquently, John, and you also, we come off a weekend of just a disaster. Restaurants create incredible camaraderie, incredible humanity. The people that work in kitchens work with their souls to create the nourishment that gives smiles to people. So you break bread, I think somewhere down the line you'll break the bad.
Let's hope. So, John, we just got a couple minutes left here. You have a recipe that we'll put on the website for Pauline's seafood gumbo. Dave was talking about gumbo. What's the trick to making a good gumbo?
Well, you know, I mean, one of the things, I was looking at it from a Chesapeake standpoint, and gumbo is not necessarily a New Orleans dish. You'll find recipes for it up here in the 1600s, 1700s. And it's about the tradition of cooking from Africa and from most countries that, you know, where I came from in Ireland, were poor. So it was one pot cooking. And this is a beautiful kind of flavored thing with seafood, with meats, a good stock, whether it's chicken stock or a fish stock. And most gumbos are noted for their roux, because roux will give the distinctive flavor to the gumbo, meaning you can make a really light roux, or you can make a really dark roux. And some of the people that I've worked with before, they insisted it look be the color of a rusty nail. And each stage that you get at, I mean, people who make gumbos and who make those roux, they're known. Their gumbos are signature dishes because the way that they make it. It gives it a beautiful nutty flavor. You can give nuances how thick or how loose that you want it. And it's all about everything that's fresh from the region. So you're tightening up a stock. You're having some nice sausage in there, lots of seafood, and tons of vegetables. Put it over rice and
you're done.
My God, that's good eating.
Yeah, that's good eating. You also have a recipe for St. Mary's County stuffed ham, which we're going to put on the website. And one of the things you're going to need is one clean, extra large white cotton T-shirt.
Indeed. Preferably not warm.
Yeah, not warm. So we'll talk about that the next time. But David Thomas, delightful to meet you. And break a leg, as we say in show business, with the new restaurant. We look forward to enjoying it.
Yeah, appreciate you.
All right. And Sasha Wohlhander, as I said, welcome to you again. And good luck on this next chapter.
Taking a gap year.
You're taking a gap year. You're allowed. All right, John, we will see you soon as well. Look forward to it. Thanks
so
much.
All right, Tom. Thank you.
All right. David Thomas is the chef partner at Ida B's Table. It's a modern soul food restaurant, and their official opening is next month. We'll have a link on our website, wypr.org/midday. They're going to have a soft opening, I guess, next week. So you could get over and check it out a little bit if
Absolutely.
You want to. Next week. Okay, but next month is the big grand opening. John Shields is a chef, the author, and the owner of Gertrude's Restaurant at the Baltimore Museum of Art. He's the host of Coastal Cooking and Chesapeake Bay Cooking on Maryland Public Television and PBS. And Sasha Wohlhander is a dear friend and a veteran restaurateur and now a gap year person here in Baltimore. Coming up after a short break, theater critic J. Wynn Russick joins me with her review of Alice and the Book of Wonderland, a new take on a classic tale at the Annapolis Shakespeare Company. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is your public radio, member-supported, 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station.